You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The Dallas Cowboys and the Indianapolis Colts took on each other on the Super Bowl on Monday night. Oh, wait, that is the wrong sport. No, the Dallas Mavericks came to Indianapolis on Monday and whooped the Pacers up and down the court to hand them their second straight loss in a 112-103 score. For Dallas, Kristaps Porzingis dominated the night, scoring 38 points and adding 12 rebounds. He shot a perfect 12 of 12 from the free throw line as well. Tim Hardaway Jr. followed him in points with 25 points on 4 of 8 shooting from 3. For the Pacers, the only positive note of the night was Domantas Sabonis' 26 points, 12 rebounds, and 9 assists as the center continues to make the case for why he should be an all-star. Following him up was Miles Turner with 11 points on 4 of 8 shooting and Malcolm Brogdon with 14 points on 6 of 17 shooting. Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, my name is Adam Friedman, and I bring you the post-game from the Pacers' loss to the Dallas Mavericks. I'm going to talk about that, the good, the bad, and the mainly ugly for tonight's game. And then we'll do a trade deadline segment. I know we talked a lot of trades on Sunday's or Monday's podcast, but I'm going to bring you some even more in-depth look. I'm going to go where Tony dared not to go, so stay tuned for that. A lot more ugly, a lot more bad than a lot than good from the Pacers' 112-103 loss to the Mavs on Monday night. If you're looking for good, you can turn to the Mavericks, who had a very good night, shooting 18 of 45 from three, missing just one free throw, and Kristaps Porzingis, you know, putting on a signature performance and really boosting my fantasy team, which thank God as we head in this home run stretch, he is on my team. He had something 50-plus fantasy points, so that helped me personally, but the Pacers have been not so good. We can go up and down the Pacers stat sheet, some glaring things that pop out, and I don't think this is something we should talk about that much, but it certainly is worth mentioning. But Victor Oladipo shot 4 of 17. That is following up a pretty poor performance against the Knicks, where he shot, let me pull it up real fast, he shot just 14% from the field. So it's a 23.5 tonight, 14% against with the Knicks, and 25% with the when he played the Bulls. He has not played well. He's out of rhythm. You can tell he just doesn't have his you know, he has the speed and the step to get to the rim, and get a shot. He just doesn't seem to have the touch yet or whatever. I don't want to harp on him too much, to be honest. He took 10 threes, which is ridiculous also to think about. You know, I think he needs to go a little more deferring, especially in this time where he's still out of flow. But it's what to expect. Call me, talk to me in a month, 3 weeks. If by, you know, let's say, I'll give the All-Star break. So I'd say 5 games after the All-Star break, or about 15 games into Victor Oladipo's return, if he is still just looking like this, then we can have a conversation about how poor he's playing. For now, I think you got to let it go. And frankly, his woes are the team's woes. So, you know, he might have went 1 of 10 from 3, but the team and themselves only went 6 of 24. The rest of the guys, I mean, you had Brogdon, who was 2 of 7 from 3. You had Doug McDermott, who went 0 of 3 from 3. I mean, just a really bad night from 3 for this team. And then the rebounding, that's where they really got crushed, between the Knicks and this game. So you had the Mavericks, who had 52 total rebounds, including 12 offensive rebounds. The Pacers had just 40 rebounds and 8 offensive rebounds. That's a minus 11 in total rebounds and minus 4 on the offensive glass. And then free throws, obviously. Pacers got a lot less, going 8 of 11 for the Mavs, 22 of 23. That's all the ugly stuff. You could talk about maybe a little bit of Aaron Holiday didn't look great. Brogdon looked a little bit off. I mean, that's kind of really kind of ugly points, but if we go to some bad, you know, some moving in the positive direction, I thought some of the bad was the chemistry and the way Brogdon, Oladipo, and Sabonis interact at the end of this game, right? So there was a small window there where the Pacers, I think, were down 3 or 5 points, and it felt like they could come back, they could get tied this game, they could force the overtime win this game. Like, this was a game that was in grasp after really what felt like really they lost every quarter, legitimately, except for the second quarter. They lost, you know, the first quarter by 3 points, third by 7, and the last one by 4. And they just, you know, never really took a lead in this game for very long at all. You know, second half, they sort of had a small lead, but I believe heading into the half. But that was sort of it. I mean, second half, they just kind of were off the court, it felt like. But the end-of-game chemistry, between Brogdon, Holiday, and Sabonis just fell off. It felt like Oladipo wanted the ball. Brogdon didn't want to give it up. They're not running really any plays. It's kind of ISO this, ISO that. His turn, my turn, which maybe is what you have to do at the end of the games, but it just felt funky, and it felt like there's something off. One, I think Brogdon recognized Oladipo doesn't have it, which I think is a fair recognition at this point. and doesn't want to just give him the ball because he doesn't want just to jack up a three and miss. And Broaden has a point. He's been a very clutch player. But I think Oladipo also feels like, I should have the ball. I'm the best player. I've been the best player. I've done this before. Let me do it kind of thing. And it's creating this weird kind of chemistry now. I think the inconsistency with Oladipo's minutes from who he's playing with, right? He gets the last 6 minutes of every quarter, let's say 4 to 6 of each quarter. So he's playing a lot of different lineups, a lot of different players, just throwing things off. You know, in my personal opinion, I would have just started him tonight and played him 6 to start the game, 6 to end the second quarter, 6 to start the third, 6 to end the fourth, and just let that be and let him play that those 24 minutes. That would have made a little more sense to me. It gets the bench back together and everything like that, and that's been part of the problem is that it's kind of different guys playing and the chemistry is off. But who am I saying against McMillan, although they have lost the past 2 games and probably should have lost the last 3, so maybe there's something to that. Obviously, TJ Warren out too. It's an opportunity to do that and whatnot. And that kind of, I guess, goes to the next bad is that the team is 0-2 without TJ Warren. I think it's actually saying something. You know, Warren is a consistent offensive player and a presence, and end of the games he's been missed. You can kind of see that, right? Even when he is, let's say, not scoring at the end of games, he provides that the defense has to respect him, and just not the same way they respect Jeremy Lamb or even an Aaron. You know, at the end of the game it was Justin Holiday at times. They respect Warren at another level because he is so present off the ball, right? He moves a ton. He just creates his own, you know, baskets through offensive rebounds, second chance and cuts, stuff like that, that these other guys don't. And so it is certainly bad they don't have him. I don't really have any update on where he's at. It's a concussion. Looked pretty bad. I think I'd be surprised if he plays this week, but I guess we'll kind of see. I mean, maybe at the end of the week he starts to come back and whatnot. The only good tonight, Domantas Sabonis, 26 points, 12 rebounds, 9 assists. And if you want to say another kind of good, I thought Miles Turner played pretty well on the defensive end. Really made a couple plays, hit a big three, I thought, at one moment. But the two centers continue to play pretty well, and really it's their guards letting them down, right? I don't think the rebounding falls on those two, right? I think they get pulled off the plays because the guards get beat, but then these guards are not pulling in these rebounds or whatnot, and they're screwing it up or whatever, and it just, you know. Sabonis, I thought, played fantastic. Like I said, he just had an awesome kind of all-star level night, but yeah, I mean, something's off with this team, and it might just be sort of this chemistry thing. Like, you know, remember the start of the year 0-3? I saw Ken Cooper tweet this. It looked kind of the same as what she said, and I agree with that, right? They started 0-3. Chemistry looked off. They just, in a couple games, figure this out. But, I mean, you know, if they had, you know, there's a good chance they could go, like, 0-4 this week and lose, 5 straight games. And then it's where Manoma has to probably say, okay, maybe it's time to start Vic. Maybe it's time to make a change, get some of that consistency back. Because the thing about these lineups, too, is by the time these guys figure each other out again, the home lineups playing again, right? Because Vic will be starting, and then you'll have these weird bench lineups and whatnot. And you know, I don't know. I mean, the team I'm watching right now feels off and feels like they're heading towards the sixth seed, and just, you know, they're gonna be fine. They're gonna make the playoffs, but just it feels weird right now. That's all I can kind of say. And hopefully they can right this ship and figure it out. And I'm really concerned they can go into the All-Star break having lost like 6 of 7 or 5 of 7 or something really bad. And just be kind of a downer heading into that break. And maybe they come out of the break and play awesome, and that changes things. But it's certainly getting concerning for me when it comes to this team. They just aren't looking very good right now. And just things just seem off. And maybe it's just, you know, simply Vic turns a 4 of 17 into an 8 of 17. Which, that wins the game probably, right? So maybe that's all it is Vic just has to finally find his rhythm. But I think Vic's going to struggle to find his rhythm until he's playing with the starters consistently, because that's where he has the most familiarity. That's where he has played with the smartest players. Even though he's never played with Brogdon right till now, I feel like Brogdon can fit with him well, because Brogdon understands the game at a high level better than some of the bench guys, well, who certainly are high IQ players, but it's just different. It's just different to play with Sabonis and Turner. It's just different to play with Warren and Brogdon more minutes. Like, I just think he needs to be put in spots where he can succeed more and have a better opportunity to score buckets as like the second or third option, versus now where he's kind of just like, get at the ball, let him see what he can do, and miss shots, touch around what he's doing, right? He's getting the ball, trying to take a three, whatever. You know, like, getting him open, he's missing shots. And maybe, like I said, he'll come back around. But, man, he has looked bad. And I think you have to say that. But I think you can say with the caveat that he will probably get better. And it's 3 games into his, you know, year-long absence. And he's not going to show up right away as the player he was last year. And it might not show up this year. It might take him next year. So, but, like, the intangibles there, right? So that, like, with Vic, it's the speed and the players, like, everything goes right until the shot, it feels like, at times, right? Defensively, they're a little screwy, and they need to figure out the offensive rebound. I think part of that is just, you know, they just have to, you know, they have to, like, focus on that, I think, almost in a way, not get beat on the second or third chance. But it feels like everything is kind of there. They make good defensive plays. They're stopping guys. They just aren't going that extra step right now. And it's just two straight losses, so, you know, they could easily turn this around and win the next two of three and change my opinion. But right now I'm feeling kind of down because they should have lost to the Bulls, and they got beat by a Knicks team I think is very good, and amassing down their best player. Now, Porzingis played great, but still that's not super encouraging. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on the Pacers so far. I know I got one tweet already from Gary, who is our number one fan on Twitter. If you want to take that title, you guys, somebody else can try to claim it, but Gary so far has it right now in Tony I opinion. But yeah, Locked On Pacers, know your opinion of the team right now. Should I overreact, underreact, what should be going on? So yeah, feel free to do that. We'll take a quick break, and then let's do some trade talk. All right, so on Sunday's podcast, Tony and I touched on the trade deadline, but I want to go a little more in depth, do a little bit of a deeper discussion. Now, let me put a caveat here, because I'm sure this will be confusing to some. I do not believe that Pacers will make a trade or should make a trade unless they're getting a player that makes them markedly better. And I don't think they're going to make one. I don't think there's any options right now that make sense. I think there could be in the summer once we see the Sabonis-Turner pairing in the playoffs. But right now, nothing makes sense unless Karl-Anthony Towns is available. And that's where I want to start, right? If Karl-Anthony Towns really is available for a trade, it's a no-brainer trade for the Pacers. Right, so Towns makes $29 million right now. And obviously, if they're going to trade him, they're going to want to blow this team up. And they want picks and stuff. I mean, I think they're going to try to go after D'Angelo Russell. I don't think they're going to be able to get him, to be honest. At least it seems that way they're not going to be able to pull him out. But if they do get rid of Towns, that'd blow this whole thing up, which seems weird because they have to play Wiggins a lot, pay him a lot and whatnot. To match salaries, you need about $28 million, give or take. Easily would do it with Lamon Turner. That would easily match that up and make the most sense off the bat. And then you throw in a couple first-round picks. I mean, that would be the way good. Maybe you probably throw in Holiday to that, maybe two first. Something where you would give up a lot to get him, and maybe you can make it worth it and whatnot. You might even get really gutsy and not allowed to protect. But then you get Towns for four more seasons. So, like, it's not like you're trading for, you know, with Towns on 1 year left. So that's a player who's worth it. Probably not going to happen right now, but, you know, somebody to watch, the Pacers decide, all right, so the Turner-Sabonis thing is not working, but Towns-Sabonis might work because Towns is an amazing offensive player. Maybe you even decide you would rather give up Sabonis because that's what they want and he fits better. Or not. I mean, I would trade either one of those guys for Towns, even if I had to throw in Lamb and Aaron Holiday, because you're really not playing Aaron Holiday right now anyways, and you can make up Lamb with a mid-level guy along with you reset Justin Holiday. So there's that possibility in my mind, and you put a pairing of Towns, Oladipo, and Brogdon, I think you've got a team that can win a championship or get very, very close to winning one. Could be an injury away from winning one, could be right there. And you put Towns in a new setting with a better coaches who focus on defense and have turned Warren into a better defensive player. You get him going pretty well, and I think it'd be a really good pairing. Will it happen? I doubt it. If I'm the T-Wolves, you have Towns on the contract, you don't have to trade him. I mean, you don't have to. That's what I would say, so don't. But we'll see, but I would throw the farm at Towns if that's possible. I mean, he's 24 years old. He's a top 12 to 15 player offensively. Maybe you don't think he's that up there that high because his defense is really shit. But he's he's maybe one of the best five offensive players in the league, and you just got to get his defense there a little bit, and Pacers are really good at that. So he's certainly a player that if, you know, you wouldn't be afraid of trading one of your cornerstones as in Turner's bonus for simply because he's under contract for so long. Like you're making a win-now move, but now that you're making a win-now move for a guy that's leaving in a year, he's got 4 years of his contract left. So, like, just guarantee, you know, basically he's got as many years of his Sabonis would have on his extension. And that puts it that way. So that's kind of apples for oranges on that one. I don't think that trade's going to happen, to be honest. But I think if it could, the Pacers should be, like, the first team up there saying, we'll give you everything. What do you want? We'll make a trade work, pretty much. Anything but Brian Oladipo you could have. Even the All-Star Sabonis. So some trades that don't make as much sense but could happen, right? So I mean, I don't know how many times Turner's going to be on the trading block. Frankly, it doesn't make any sense to me to make a trade with Turner. You know, I saw this Kings Twitter and Pelicans Twitter sniffing around Turner. You might have seen kind of a Bogdanovich and Bagley trade. I think they threw in a dead cap of maybe Deadman for like Turner and Lamb and somebody. That to me doesn't really make sense. I mean, I do think the most expendable player on the Pacers roster right now is probably Jeremy Lamb. You know, just because the way Justin Holiday has played, the way that you have the mid level next year to replace him if you need to, and all that stuff. And I think, frankly, Turner is probably number two on that list because I think they're both properly paid and can be replaced with a better talent. Now, I don't think Bagley or Bogdanovich does that. You know, like I said, you're not making a move to be lateral. You're making a move to go up a level, right? So like another trade you look at possibly is like a Bradley Beal in the summer trade, which that's where, again, you put Turner and Lamb. Does that work? Does it get you, you know, does that keep the Wizards competitive, but then get also Bradley Beal, who is amazing? And I mean, I know it might feel weird to play Brogdon and Oladipo and Beal together, but I think you make it work as a three talented players that would make an awesome, you know, top core to be sort of a unique thing to do, but interesting try. The other one, I guess, is Kevin Love, who I think doesn't really make a lot of sense. His age is past where you need him to be. That would involve Turner again. I actually don't think Kevin Love is that much better of a player than Turner. I think he's slightly better right now, but I think the next 3 years of both players, Turner's probably going to be better. And it makes less money. I mean, Love's making 31.3 in 2021. Turner's making $18 million flat. I mean, that's the difference there. I think, yeah, it's getting the point. It is really hard to find a trade partner that makes sense. I do think, the only trade that makes sense in my mind is to go for a Towns or a Beal. And Beal can't be traded right now because the way he signed his extension, so that doesn't really matter. But, like, that's where it makes the most sense. It doesn't really make sense to go after some of these lateral moves, you know. Getting rid of Turner just to get rid of Turner doesn't really make sense. He's playing really well. Yes, sure, he might not be up to his potential. Why not every single moment? But he is an awesome defensive player that is still proving that day in, day out. He fits with this team really well. And I truly think he's supposed to succeed in the playoffs together against most teams. We'll see what happens against, like, if they play the Bucks in a second-round series or whatnot. But I think they can beat Philly, Boston, Miami, or Toronto with the team they have right now. And that's the goal, right, to beat one of those teams in the first round, and then we'll see what happens. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts. You know, I know it's an interesting and kind of debating topic, right? Debatable topic, right? I know Turner caused a lot of controversy in Pacers land, right? Is he good? Is he bad? People have a lot of thoughts on that. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on Turner. You can tweet at LockedOnPacers. If you have any trades, I mean, feel free to send some of these random trades at TeastNBA. To send it to Tony East, not to me. Tony is the trade guy. So send any trade you got, any, you know, thing you feel like could be cool, often trade, tweet at TEastNBA. You can also follow me at FreedomAdam5. Our podcast at Locked On Pacers. As always, we bring you 5 shows a week. We will bring you a show tomorrow previewing the Raptors game. Then Wednesday, post game from me once again. If there is a trade, there'll be an emergency podcast on Thursday posted. If not, you'll get a preview of the weekend's games from Tony once more. And then we'll run all back again next week as we head towards the All-Star break. That is all for the Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.